Hey everybody, Ben here from the Bonehead Podcast, and this weekend we had some amazing news for Blood Bowl. I think it's amazing news. We've got Dungeon Bowl. It's been announced, it's been previewed. We're going to get Dark Elves and Skaven as one team. We're going to get Dwarves and Ogres as another team. You guys will know how much we love mixed teams on here. But the whole point here is that it's going to be Blood Bowl in a dungeon. And I thought what we could do is we could have a look at the history of Dungeon Bowl, because there's going to be a lot of players out there who are insanely excited about this, okay? Because they may have been playing Blood Bowl in the early 90s when Dungeon Bowl was kicking around. It was the original Dungeon Bowl was released in 1989. Now, 32 years later, Games Workshop are resurrecting it. So if you're not aware of Dungeon Bowl, or if you just want to take a little bit of a trip down memory lane, what we're going to do is we're going to talk through the history of Dungeon Bowl. And it started with this box right here in 1989. So Blood Bowl 2nd edition was released in 1988. That was the one with the polystyrene pitch. With the skull in the center, you had two plastic teams with the little base rings. Two more plastic teams followed the year after, and it was this box here. Elves, Dwarves, and Dungeon Bowl. So basically it was a box set. It was completely contained. It had the second edition rules, but it was very much tailored for playing Blood Bowl in a dungeon, exactly like we're seeing with the 2021 version. Although if it doesn't come out till 2022, you know, it's the 2022 version. Anyway, the Blood Bowl 2020 edition, that's what we'll go with. This box had basically A4 card dungeon tiles. It had like eight of them. It had two teams in very bright plastic. We had, I think it was yellow elves and orange dwarves. And it was the same situation as with the second edition core box. You had the bases with the rings for positionals. So you had two teams, you had doors, you had teleporters, and you had treasure chests. Those were all tokens. I think there was also spiked pit traps as well, which we'll definitely be having a look at. And I'm hoping to see in 2020 edition. I imagine that we won't. Anyway, let's have a quick look at the contents of the original box. So in the original box, like I said, you've got these dungeon tiles. Now, it's essentially A4 card, and on them, you've got pillars. There are walls depicting where you can and can't run. Now, these were very small squares. I think this was 25 mil. So yeah, it was around about A4 size, these dungeon tiles. And there were six, and you had two separate big open wide ones where the end zones were, essentially. So you would build your dungeon in various ways, and you could put them together, and that was all part of the fun of the game. You could line them up and have a really long game. You could separate them or put them together. I mean, this is a pretty standard format that we've got on the screen now, which is just six together in a rectangle and the two end zones on the side. They're, like I said, you had the treasure chests and you had the teleporters. So I guess we should take a moment to talk about why there are treasure chests and teleporters. And we'll delve into the lore fully in a minute, but the new version and the old version both had multiple teleporters and multiple, basically, boxes with either a bomb or a ball in. So basically, in a Dungeon Bowl situation, there are six treasure chests. One of them has a ball in, the rest will explode upon being opened. So the whole vibe here with Dungeon Bowl is that it is kind of, it's a halfway house between a game of Blood Bowl and an adventure, okay? Then a classic D&D dungeon crawl quest. So you go into the dungeon with your team, you explore, you open treasure chests. Some will be mimics, some will be booby trapped, some will have the ball and allow you to score. The goal with Dungeon Bowl has always been to be the first team to score one touchdown. Now, there is a slight variant that I absolutely love and do recommend, but we'll come to that a different time. And there are also teleporters in Dungeon Bowl as well. And what we're going to do in a second is have a look at the history from the second edition one. But I do love that they have completely carried over. And the whole point of the teleporters is to get you around those wall situations. So the original one, you had places where you couldn't get to. And as the Dungeon Bowl developed into third edition as well and was played out with dungeon tiles, you had to find a different way to get around. But I guess we should just go and have a look at the second edition lore before we move on. So to get the full flavour, what we're going to do is we're going to have a look at the 1989 version of the book. And we're going to go to the background, which it starts out with here. So the Colleges of Magic. I'll paraphrase some of it, but it is available on the internet somewhere. You can go and find it. So the Colleges of Magic. There are many variations of Blood Bowl played throughout the Old World. Possibly the strangest is Dungeon Ball. Deep beneath the surface, two teams of highly skilled psychopaths stalk around a dungeon in order to settle an argument that has kept wizards at loggerheads for years. For many decades, spellcasters have disputed who is the most powerful. Dungeon Ball is their latest attempt to settle the matter without involving the general population, who usually come off very badly when wizards have a disagreement. The argument stems from the very nature of magic itself. As the shattered chaos warp gates above the poles, raw magic is sucked into the world through huge tears in space and is torn apart by immense forces. Pure magic is split off into distinct colours. Incandescent clouds stream across the surface of the world in huge rolling sheets of colour, filling the sky with multicoloured swirls and patterns. Yet all of this is only visible to wizards. This is known as the Winds of Chaos. So those of you that have been involved with Warhammer setting, you'll know about Winds of Chaos, you'll know about the Chaos Realm Gates from the additional creation of the Warhammer world. Basically, the old ones, who then turned into be the Slann, had these stargates above the world so they could travel there. They broke, and basically hell came through, and hell came through in the way of chaos and chaos magic. That's what created the Winds of Magic here. Many wizards, when starting their studies, declare an affinity for one of the colors and study it throughout their life. They reflect their chosen color in numerous ways, most obviously in their mode of dress. They wear robes made with the cloth of their chosen color, or feature that color in their robe's design. By restricting themselves to one color, they hope to gain some advantage over their fellows. A few wizards disagree and say that the color should be taken as a whole. They believe that splitting the rainbow weakens its power and thus the study of the whole range. Fewer still side with the color of darkness, or magic in its undivided state. So, old school, there's 8 colleges of magic, but in this edition of Blood Bowl there is also the Rainbow and the Dark College, so this takes up to 10. The new edition has stated that there are 8 colleges of magic, so we might see a bit of differentiation. In fact, we already have. Each group of spellcasters from a college of their chosen color, and each college, which is not so much a place but rather a set of beliefs and traditions sustained by wizards who follow that color, try to outdo the others and prove themselves superior. A few wizards got tired of all-night arguments about which color was the most powerful, arguments which generally reached a climax with the total destruction of a city's wizard's quarters, which usually upset neighboring wizards who were kept awake at night by the noise, and started more bouts of violent spellcasting. The wizards, who were keen sports fans in their spare time, decided that each college should set up a Blood Bowl team and settle the matter amicably. After all, they didn't want the dispute to end in all-out warfare, and yet they did want to play Blood Bowl. Most people go to war and have a rest from playing Blood Bowl. Unfortunately, the NAF would not allow them to take part in the normal league, stating that Blood Bowl was an honourable sport that was not a battlefield where one could settle arguments. The official who made this statement was later told to take a very long holiday and try and remember what game he was actually talking about before he came back. Undeterred, the wizards set up their own league and applied for entry. The NAF refused, much to the wizards' annoyance, resulting in 4 minor battles and 576 fatalities, and forbid the wizards from playing. The wizards, by now very tired of the arguments and desperate to get on with the game, went off and invented their own version, Dungeon Bowl. And thus, in the latter part of 2473, the Magicians Armorical Dungeon Bowl Federation, or MAD, MAD, came into being. Dungeon Bowl is played, as its name suggests, in a dungeon. The two teams start at opposite ends of a small underground complex, the idea being to get the opponent's starting position with the ball and score a touchdown, much as in normal Blood Bowl. Of course, you can't take a kickoff underground, and so it would be unfair to let one team start with the ball, so the wizards hid the ball in a treasure chest and placed it somewhere in the dungeon, along with 5 other chests rigged with explosives if tampered with. Many wizards have complained that putting 5 trapped chests in a dungeon as well as the chest containing the ball is very unfair, and that they should forget about the ball and just trap all of the chests. Classic wizards. Initial games also revealed that there was a tendency for the action to concentrate around doorways, which was very violent but very boring. Without any solution springing to mind, the wizards fell back onto the one thing they knew best: magic. Wouldn't it be a good idea, they said, if the players could teleport around the dungeon? Just think of the tactics they could use. Now, this is Ben here, yes, I'm on board with this. Their knowledge of teleportation, however, was and still is severely limited, with a real risk of losing the odd player somewhere in the time streams. Still, they reasoned, they won't know if we don't tell them. So they didn't tell them, and of course they made sure the ball could never be lost by protecting it with a magic field. But the players, well, they're not all that important. The Dungeon Ball League is made up of 10 teams, each sponsored by one of the 10 colleges of magic. Like I said, the 2020 version, 8, but we'll see when the full book lands. They play each other twice during the season to decide who goes on to the final for the Dungeon Ball trophy. It is currently watched by 90% of wizards in the Old World via a variant of the Cabal Vision spell linked to crystal balls suspended through the dungeon. Even though the idea was originally put forward to settle the matter of which college was the most powerful and was to be a one-off event, MAD has now been going on for over 16 years. I guess that's nearly 35 years now. And the arguments still continue. The current holders of the Cup, 2489, are the Blood Axes, the dwarf team who represent the Bright Wizards. Of course, the other colleges say this was a fluke and they are already in training for the next season. It doesn't look like it's going to be a problem. It doesn't look like a problem that's going to be solved in the near future or ever come to that. Since MAD was set up, the NAF have gradually become more tolerant of them, and their relationship has now reached a point where some friendly matches between the two have been played. The future of these sorts of games is in doubt following a game of Dungeon Ball in which Trok Elfsplitter of the Gouged Eye spent the whole match waiting for someone to give him the ball so that he could take the kickoff. Inviting a Dungeon Ball team to play Blood Bowl is no better. During a Blood Bowl match, Jork Helmson of the Doomforgers refused to play until the referees had dug up all of the teleporters that the Reikland Reavers had obviously buried. Even though their relationship is beginning to thaw, the MAD and the NAF still compete for new players. While the NAF are obviously the most established of the two and take the lion's share of prospective new players, the MAD are rapidly catching up in terms of the number of applicants. Some say this is because of the attractive terms of employment that Dungeon Ball teams provide, and others say it's a much better game to play, while a few insist it's just much easier to ambush your opponent in a dungeon where there aren't any refs around to spoil things. So that is the background, that is the original background of Dungeon Ball from 1989. So we know why Dungeon Ball exists, or that's at least why Dungeon Ball came around. Basically, wizards wanted to solve stuff by playing a game of Blood Bowl. The NAF wouldn't let them, so they created their own version, and they had dungeons, and then they chucked in teleporters to fix the gameplay, which I think is brilliant, and they had treasure chests in there to make it less easy for players to, you know, just run from one end to the other. So I'm going to interject here. Dungeon Ball is played that way. First team to score a touchdown wins. Six chests, one ball within them. I really love the Tribal Wizard Cup version of these rules, where it is a 50% chance. Okay, so you play 16 turns of Blood Bowl, and half the chests have balls in them. And basically, you can win then 3-0, 1-0, 2-1. It gives you a variant of the play, and you play for 16 turns, which when you're playing with Dungeon Ball, because there are less players, is actually much quicker than a standard game of Blood Bowl. So Dungeon Ball in its original format, and as it looks like it's going to be in 2021, is going to be a play forever until one person scores. If that is a bit too linear for you, play with three balls and either 8 or 16 turns to get it done in, depending on the time. It's also a really good way to play a tournament format too. So what we'll do is we'll have a look at the rest of this rulebook, the original rulebook here, because in it are some of the, well, some of the best art for Blood Bowl, like classic second edition art. But you've got the board setups here, and this is what I did want to have a look at and just kind of talk through. Like I said, you've got six big boards in this one here. A1, that would be big. A4 size. So they've got different setups, examples in the rulebook. But basically, the whole issue here was just like, look, chuck them down, put them together, and you will create yourself a really interesting and different catacomb to run around and play through. And that was how Dungeon Ball was played in second edition. And there was a couple of really cool and innovative twists to it. So we've got treasure chests, we've got the teleporters, there was rules on placing doors. Now it looks like in the new edition you're just going to get a cardboard thing to show which squares are touching, and that makes a lot of sense here. So teleporters, teleportation is not an exact science, and there's always a chance that something may go wrong. In the new edition, how that works is if you get on a teleporter, you roll a dice. If you roll the same teleporter that you're on, you are removed from the game. If you appear on a teleporter that another player is already standing on, you stay there, and that person who was on the original teleporter immediately rolls the dice and teleports around. So it's very much the same, and it's the chain reaction roll here, straight from 1989, and I absolutely love that. So one thing we don't know about Blood Bowl 2020 yet, but I imagine we are going to see, is bouncing balls off walls. So they had this rule in the second edition one, and we'll have a look at the third edition update that Jarvis Johnson put out. Basically, you can throw a ball at a wall and it will carry on, but in a bounced trajectory. So if you throw it 45 degrees, you can kind of throw balls round corners that way, and you can kind of avoid throwing an interception by just kind of bouncing it off a wall to get to a different player. It's a quite cool way to do it. I'm not entirely sure how they're going to do it in this edition. I think it'll probably be very similar. It might just be a really basic version of using the throw-in template, but I'd like to see them introduce a rule with maybe just a negative modifier to passing, but it will allow you to throw it around a corner or bounce it away so that, you know, a player can't interfere, can't deflect it. It's going to be a really cool way to do it. And the other thing in here that I really wanted to show you is the original... Oh, there's loads of cool rules in here. You got large monsters, pit traps, everything that I fully expect to see in the 2020 edition. It looks like it's a full book, and I don't think that the standard rules are going to take the full book, so I would not be surprised if we didn't see special rules for traps and stuff like that. So we've seen the 2020 version of two teams. We've seen the Fire Team and the Shadow Team. They are different than the original races, but one of the coolest things about Dungeon Bowl is the fact that they were made up of multiple teams. Multiple races could play on these teams, and that just made some really creative combinations that I fell in love with. And we drove on forward with the Bonehead ball rules, with the mixed team rules for that, because it just allows you to make so many combinations. So I thought what we'd do is we'd have a look at the original ones from 1989. Each of these teams had, because there was basically, there's 10 teams. In the new edition, it looks like you can form a team based on a college. We're not sure how it's gonna work with how you pick the teams that you can pick your players from. There was 10 teams, though, in this edition, and you got to play as one of them. So the Light Wizards had the Doom Forgers, which was Dwarfs, Halflings, and Werewolves. The Gold Wizards had the Warhawks, Orcs, Snotling, and Ogres. Jade Wizards had the Green Destroyers. This was all greenskins, Goblins, Orcs, and Trolls. Celestial Wizards had the Celestial Comets, Elves, and Elf Blitzers. Grey Wizards had Grey Shadows, Humans, Snotlings, and Ogres. That was a combo I loved. And it looks like the Shadows team is the Grey Wizards team. So it looks like they've been retconned a bit. Amethyst Wizards, Grim Reapers was the team name, Skaven Goblins and Minotaurs. Bright Wizards, Blood Axes, Dwarves, Humans and more Dwarves. Amber Wizards, Stormbolts, Dark Elves, Orcs and Skaven. So it's interesting, we've seen the Shadow College team drop and they've got Dark Elves and Skaven in. But in the 89 edition, that was the Amber Wizards, the Stormbolts. They had Dark Elves and Skaven. So I wonder if they're having a bit of a jog around or whether you just can pick a combination of two teams. Rainbow Wizards. So like I said, 8 colleges of magic, but one that has all, one that has none. So the Rainbows were Harlequins, Elves, Halflings and Humans. And the Dark Wizards were Black Widows, Skeletons, Mummies and Trolls. So basically, ever since Dungeon Ball has existed, these colleges have used multiple different races of players. Now, if you think about it from a thematic point of view, that is because they couldn't get hold of as many players. So they couldn't get hold of enough dwarves to make a dwarf team. So they'd be like, right, that's fine. We'll take some halflings, some werewolves and chuck them together. Plus, in the 89 edition, teams weren't necessarily defined. They were built by race in the same way you kind of build a dungeon quest party, right? Which I love. This was kind of juiced up a bit for the third edition rules, where it kind of aligned the teams a bit. And I think we'll have a look at the third edition rules now. So we've had a look and we talked through the 89 edition, okay? That was for second edition Blood Bowl. Then about 10 years later, Jarvis Johnson, who created Blood Bowl, reimagined it, created a rule set. I think it came out in either the Blood Bowl Compendium or in White Dwarf. But basically, Jarvis Johnson updated it for the new edition of Blood Bowl. So third edition of Blood Bowl is when the block dice came out, basically. So Jervis says, almost 10 years ago, I designed a game called Dungeon Bowl. The game was a supplement for a previous edition of Blood Bowl, and it proved highly popular, so much so that people still ask me about it at conventions and in letters to this day. What makes this especially surprising was the game was designed over the course of about a week, when we decided at the very last minute to include a game with two new plastic Blood Bowl teams. In spite of the rather limited amount of time available to develop the game, or maybe because of it, the game played surprisingly well. So after I was asked for the umpteenth time if we had any plans to release the game for the new edition, I thought, what the heck, I'll update it for the new rules, and that's what makes up the rest of this article. So this article is available online as well. So he just goes on here to talk through Colleges of Magic and how it works. But what I wanted to look at is two things. The first is the Dungeon Bowl College team chart from the third edition version of Blood Bowl, now a Dungeon Bowl. This was only ever a free supplement. This was never released as a game. There was no third edition Dungeon Bowl. There's only been one Dungeon Bowl, which was the second edition one. So the fact we're seeing it now is absolutely delicious. So Dungeon Bowl College team chart, they took the colleges from the second edition and they updated them ever so slightly. So Light Wizards got Dwarves, Halflings and Norse now instead of Werewolves. Golden Wizards got Orcs, Chaos Dwarves and Ogres. Jade Wizards, Goblins, Orcs and Trolls. Celestial Wizards, High Elves, Wood Elves and Tree Men. Grey Wizards got Humans, Chaos and Ogres. That's a pretty juicy combination. That was my favourite one. Amethyst Wizards, Skaven, Goblins and Minotaurs. Also pretty good, right? Bright Wizards, Dwarves, Humans and Norse. Amber Wizards, Dark Elves, Orcs and Skaven. Again, that's a pretty potent combination. Rainbow Wizards got Wood Elves, Halflings and Humans. And Dark Wizards got Undead, Dark Elves and Trolls. So the way each of these teams was built was you could take 0 to 16 from your first race, from the main race. 0 to 6 players from the other race. And the last race you could take 0 to 2 players from. So if we look at the Light Wizards, you could take up to 16 from a Dwarf team, up to 6 players from a Halfling team, and up to 2 players from a Norse team. Now, they also split out the big guys as a race sometimes, which made it a bit confusing, especially as we look at the new edition. So I'm interested to see exactly how that rolls out. I wouldn't be surprised if we just saw it split into two teams perhaps, and you could have half the positionals from each team and just standardize the kind of mixed rules. There'll probably be different combinations that are allowed and aren't allowed, but even in the third edition you could see that it transitioned across. So instead of just elves, there was wood elves, dark elves, high elves involved in there. Werewolves have gone as a race. They are now replaced with the Norse team, which actually makes a lot of sense. I think during this time the Norse team had werewolves on it anyway. But you'll see that on this chart there's a bunch of teams missing, and that's even from the olden days. There's no vampires, there's no necromantic team, and that's because all the teams kind of came out and third edition was when Blood Bowl really grew the most, with the way it transitioned just races of players to actual succinct teams with styles, with play styles. So Amazons aren't in here, and there's a few other teams that just don't exist at this point. Nurgle team again was kind of brought in during third edition. So we've now got what, 28 official teams for Blood Bowl if you add Khorne. And then there's the Demons of Khorne team and the Slan team as well, who I don't think we'll see included as a legal one. So that's 28 different teams that Games Workshop are going to have to wedge in here to be in one college or another. I'm very interested to see how they do that. How we do that for Bonehead Bowl is by alignment. Basically, we say you're lawful, neutral or chaotic. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see something like that, but they might just do it as a free-for-all. That said, the Shadow team definitely kind of got that Amber Wizard vibe. Dark Elves, Orcs, Skaven. Do Dwarves have Ogres in this edition at all? Bright Wizards, which would be right, would be the Fire Wizards here. Dwarves, Humans and Norse. So kind of replace that Norse element with Ogres. I like the mixing of two teams. I love this because you can build some really unique stuff. But actually, if it just goes to a mixture of two teams, I'm still going to be real happy, because that is a great way to play. Now, the second biggest change that the third edition of Dungeon Bowl brought out was, by this point, Warhammer Quest, classic Games Workshop dungeon crawl, came out, and it had these dungeon tiles. And if you look at these dungeon tiles, you'll see that they are the same design and same size as the ones that are now landing in the Blood Bowl 2020 version. You've got 4x4 rooms, you've got 8x4 rooms, you've got 6x2 corridors, you've got 4x4 L's and 6x4 T junctions. So this is what the new Dungeon Bowl is based off. So instead of having set piece of A4, because the base size has gone from 25 to 34 now, 32 mil bases with 34 mil squares, you can't get that many squares on there. So if they were to do the A4 size, which I would be surprised if they'd gone that way, it would have been much limited. Now they've dropped these 34 mil square ones. First of all, they're going to sell it to a whole bunch of Warcry and Age of Sigmar people who want to use it, and just general D&D players. But it allows so many different variations. And you can see here in the dungeon setups, we've gone from those kind of rectangular setups to just free-form dungeons. And the way they recommend doing it is just to spend some time as a team of players playing a game to build a dungeon together. Now, we're all kind of RP kind of guys, right? Building a dungeon is incredibly fun. But the cool thing about this new edition is we're going to see preset dungeons. And I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see preset dungeons in the rulebook. You sit down, you roll a d6, we're playing in this dungeon. But actually, you get two boxes, you make a bigger dungeon. This is the coolest thing here, is this is almost unlimited at this point. You can build extra tiles, you can build different tiles, you can have all kinds of stuff in there, you can have 3D levels, and that's where the kind of Blood Bowl element reaches and meets that dungeon questing element, which is just phenomenally good. But you can see 3rd edition one still had 6 chests, still had 6 teleporters, and it had the end zones here, which were 4x4 rooms with an 8x2 end zone space. To score, you find the ball and you put it in one of those boxes. It's a great way to play, and it's very different. Now, I think these rules here also had something which I thought was absolutely brilliant. So we've got, optional dungeon terrain. Now, have we done videos on this? We've done podcasts on using terrain and how, you push a dude into terrain, you get +1. You push a dude into a wall and they can't go through it. They go down where they are and they get Mighty Blow from the wall, which will stack. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see that in the new edition. But they had lurking monsters, wandering monsters for Blood Bowl. Now, the 2020 preview article said maybe even dragons. And if you look here, the lurking monster table from the 3rd edition of Dungeon Bowl had giant spiders, giant scorpions, hydras, manticores, dragons, and demons. So we are probably going to see bouncing balls off walls. We're going to see pit traps probably. And we are almost definitely going to see rules for lurking monster tables. So we're about to take Blood Bowl off the pitch and into an adventurer's playground. So we are about to expand how we can play this game 1,000-fold. And we're going to see dungeons built and shared in the very same way that you go, I'm going to play this D&D adventure. We're now going to be like, guys, I've planned this dungeon out. Here's some cool elements to it. And then the real amazing thing with Dungeon Bowl is that you can have a D&D element to it. You can have a third player playing the DM who can control lurking monsters, who can control pre-created traps for you as well. It takes Blood Bowl from just a competitive fun game and absolutely hones in the narrative. And that is why Dungeon Bowl is just one of the best things here, is because it creates that sandbox for you to build a story in, and the narrative is so thick. It's random, the way the balls are distributed and the fact that you blow up if it's not a ball, incredibly random and incredibly swingy, but it is also just one of the most fun and outrageous ways to play Blood Bowl I can think of. It has always been an absolute pleasure to contemplate, and I wanted this to land for 2020 because you guys are going to love it. It's going to be great fun. It is not the tight competitive thing that standard Blood Bowl isn't anyway. This is just narrative carnage, and it's going to be fantastic. Anyway, guys, I'm going to wrap up now. Thank you very much for watching and listening. Do let me know what you think of Dungeon Bowl landing. What are you looking forward to seeing? What are you worried about? Just come on. Let's start talking. I know this isn't going to land until probably next year, but oh man, what a year that is going to be. Anyway, I will disappear. Thank you very much. Happy dungeon exploring. Thanks very much for watching. We really appreciate your support. If you want to help support the channel even further, please like and subscribe, or come join us on our Patreon. We have early access to content. We get loads of feedback from you guys, and we try and do competitions as much as we can. Or you can get yourself some Bonehead Podcast merch on our Spreadshirt site. So if you want to support a team, especially for the Bonehead Championship, you can pick up a shirt, a mug, things like that. It all helps support the channel, and we really appreciate it. Anyway, links below. Thank you very much. Happy blocking.